南無妙法蓮華経、南無妙法蓮華経、南無妙法蓮華経。Hi everyone, thanks for being here. Thank you for your practice. Everything's working. Okay, let's get to it. BDK, translation of the Lotus Sutra from Kumarajiva's Chinese translation. Actually, a copy of that Chinese translation. It's a little different, but according to BDK, not enough to matter. Although BDK has their own biases, evidently. We've seen that already. But the meaning seems to be clearly coming through, doesn't it? We are continuing on chapter 11. In these transformed lands, the earth was made of lapis lazuli and adorned with jeweled trees. Right? The Buddha land, in other words, the perception, the deep, profound appreciation for the process of the engine of life transforms the way we experience everything. Instead of using our epistemology from samsaric identification with everything and labeling everything and so on and so forth, you know, the clinging, craving, all of that, when you see through your Buddha mind, you see the activity or the process of being, right? We've talked about this a lot. A reminder, if you don't know what epistemology is, pick up a copy of Buddhism Reference and look it up. Volume 2 is coming, not in the next month or two, but I'm working on it. I've got several terms in there that will be handy as you dig into Buddhism. But volume 1, really, I think, is all you need. But, you know, if you like to dig into subjects, there are words that we come across that dive deep into maybe earlier teachings of Buddhism, but they do get built upon to the understanding we have in Lotus Sutra Buddhism practice, yeah? Okay. The trees were 500 yohanas in height and were adorned with branches, leaves, blossoms, and fruits in their proper turn. Under every tree was a jeweled lion's seat, 5 yohanas in height, which was adorned with various jewels. There were no oceans, interesting, rivers or great mountain kings, such as Mount Musilinda, Mount Mahamulisilinda, Mount Kakravada, Mount Mahakrakavana, or Mount Sumeru. Finally, one I recognize. The lands were all made into one Buddha world throughout. So this is the perception opening further than the self, further than other, the recognition that everything is in unity, happening moment to moment, and therefore the vision, the mind's understanding of phenomena drops the whole idea of the individual identified ego self and sees a self that's in unison with the cosmos. You've heard me say before, it's an immense expansion of mind, right? Because you perceive the formation of everything moment to moment to moment. It's humbling. It's exciting. It's alive, truly alive, because it's not dependent on stuff that no longer is, because it's past. Yeah, the past is the past. Thinking about the past is something happening now. It's not remembering the past. That's a fallacy samsarically that we use to justify all our clinging and craving. And that's why we are anxious and stressed out. Oh, I was going to bring... Did I print it out? Shouldn't even bring it up then. If you're someone 50 or above, you may remember... Oh, my goodness. Now I drop names like that all the time. Anyway, he used to be called Dr. Love or Dr. Hugs. I have some really great quotes from him. and 15 of them, actually, and I was going to share them with you. He didn't claim to be a Buddhist. In fact, he used in some of his quotes, and he talked about God, but he didn't talk about God as a deity. He talked about God as a higher interpretation or understanding of self. So wasn't a Buddhist, and I don't want to start using that word, G-O-D, because it's so charismatic and full of misinformation. But there are a lot of quotes that had nothing to do with that, because he was about being the best self. And he has some quotes that sound so Buddhist. I just thought I'd share them with you just to indicate that, you know, people have asked me over the years, is Buddhism, or is the Lotus Sutra Buddhism, Nichiren's clarifications on that, the only way to achieve enlightenment? Well, it's the only method, you know, taught, and clearly, if you clearly understand Shakyamuni's teachings, as Nichiren did, and other scholars as well, and as we're practicing correctly Shakyamuni's Lotus Sutra method, there's nothing else like it. But as an individual human sentient mind, again, Buddhahood is innate. So there are going to be some amazing individuals who, on their own, and maybe just, and I've often thought this, as you get older, if you're paying attention at all, you're going to grow in knowledge, right? Which is why historically we've always respected our elders, because through falling on our face enough times, either physically or, you know, mentally, enlightenment happens. To what degree, though, that would be the question. I've been doing this long enough now, and I've been a skeptic all my life. I don't think anything really describes, points to, and enables any sentient mind to get to enlightenment itself. I think humans can touch it from time to time, but I think that takes special environs, circumstances, thoughts, certain kinds of people. I don't think it's common at all. So if you want to make it universal and common, which was the goal of Siddhartha Gautama when he started out, 12 years later, boom, found it. So yeah, it's pretty unique. I haven't found anything else like it, that's for sure. Okay, the lands were made into one Buddha world throughout. The jeweled earth was level and covered everywhere with jewel-studded drapes. Banners and umbrellas were set up. Precious, okay, it's a really amazing experience, yeah? Then Shakyamuni Buddha again transformed and purified 200 myriad of kotas of nayutas of lands in each of the eight directions so that the Buddhas could come and sit. So much like he did earlier, in earlier chapters, with a ray of light penetrating every sentient mind there, so they could experience Buddha-ness for a moment, he was now inviting that potential Buddha-ness from all corners of the cosmos, right? That's why there's eight directions, up, down, all four, and the angular, right? He described them earlier. So he transformed all of them there to come and sit so that the environs would mirror this Buddha-ness. And in the transformed lands, the earth was of lapis lazuli, so on and so forth, trees, yana, no oceans, blah, 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 blah. He repeats the same paragraph. The lands were all made into one Buddha world throughout. The jeweled earth was level and covered everywhere with jeweled drapes, studded drapes, banners and umbrellas, so on and so forth. Then the mentally created forms of Shakyamuni Buddha, which had been teaching the Dharma in the mentally created, it says magically here, and that's BDK. That's just a horrid word. Oh, do I have that in the, well, I'll check later. But that's that should be one of the two of the terms. I say it all the time, magic and mystic. Those terms should not be in Buddhist dialogue. They just, unless they're being contravened, right? Because there's nothing magical or mystical in Buddhism. It's very, very earthbound. It's pragmatic. That's Siddhartha's whole mission. So why these words creep in, it's really bothersome. So it's mentally created, but in other translations, what's the word I've heard? Not manifestations. But it's similar to manifestations. They're manifestations of Buddha because Buddhism is about the mind, yes? Like personages, right? So then the magic, mentally created forms of Shakyamuni Buddha were, or the personages of form, like these other Buddhas he keeps talking about, right? They're mental inventions, okay, of Shakyamuni Buddha. Emanations, that's the other word I've heard, which had been teaching the Dharma in the hundreds of thousands of myriads of kotas of nayutas of lands in the east, equal in number to the sands of the Ganges River, gathered here. In this way, all the Buddhas in the 10 directions gradually came until all were assembled. So that's all of the other Buddha names that you've heard Shakyamuni talk about, from Amitabha Buddha to, you know, all of the crazy names you've heard in here. Not Bodhisattvas, Buddhas that he's talked about, right? At that time, these Buddha Tathagatas filled 400 myriad of kotas of nayutas of lands in each director. So the entire cosmos and the potential for Buddhahood in the entire cosmos, here present in the ceremony in the sky, as it's often called, the assembly in the sky, floating in front of the treasure tower, right? Then sitting on lion seats under the jewel trees, the Buddhas each dispatched their attendants with hands full of jeweled flowers to inquire after the Buddha Shakyamuni, saying, O son of a virtuous family, you should approach the Buddha Shakyamuni on Mount Grakuta and give him a greeting, saying, Are you without illness and pain, and are you full of vigor and at ease, and are the assemblies of bodhisattvas and sravakas all at ease or not? Then, having paid homage to the Buddha by scattering him with these jeweled flowers, saying to him, The Buddha so-and-so wishes you to open this jeweled stupa. The so-and-so. In other words, all the various named Buddhas, quote-unquote, emanations of Shakyamuni, right? Mental emanations. All say to him, by turns, wish you to open this jeweled stupa, this treasure tower. What are you giving us here? All the other Buddhas dispatched their messages like this. So this must have taken some time, right? Again, we'll talk about that time when you'll see later. He'll talk about time of all of this happening in a single moment. It's, yeah, he liked to toy with time. Time is our sentient invention. So not altogether odd that he would play with it in the same way. It makes you consider what kalpas and so forth are as far as our experience of time, yeah? Then the Buddha Shakyamuni saw that this mentally created, his emanations, all gathered and sitting on lion seats, and he heard that all the Buddhas also wanted him to open the treasure stupa, which really means, and you know the symbolism of these other Buddhas, were to reach into the mental cognitions of all the various sentient minds. Call back to the Immeasurable Meanings Sutra, which we didn't talk about because BDK, I'll have to look and see. They probably have a separate translation for it, but they didn't include it with the Lotus Sutra, which is a little odd, but this is that BDK seems to be working on an earlier scholarship than Mahayana. Yeah. Immediately rising, he hovered in the air, and the entire fourfold assembly rose and gazed attentively at the Buddha with their palms pressed together. So here it is. This is the moment. This is the assembly in the sky, because everyone is raised off their seats, the ground, wherever. Again, what he's raising is all sentient minds. Follow? And he's holding us aloft to present us the treasure tower, the wisdom of all Buddhas, the essence of our own Buddha-ness. We don't know that yet, but this is what he's going to reveal. Thereupon, Shakyamuni Buddha opened the entrance to the seven-jeweled stupa with his right finger. There was a tremendous sound as if the bar and lock to the gateway of a large city were being pushed aside. Then immediately the entire gathering saw the Tathagata Prabhutarana in the jeweled stupa, sitting on the lion's seat as if he were in meditation, his body whole and undecomposed? That must be a typo. That's weird. Anyway, they heard him say, "Splendid, splendid, the Buddha Shakyamuni is teaching the Lotus Sutra, and I have come in order to hear it." Now, Nichiren interprets this Buddha Prabhutarana. May not be Nichiren, it may have been Tendai. At any rate, that Buddha we know as Taho Buddha, yeah? Who sits side by side with Shakyamuni in the mandala behind me. At that time, the fourfold assembly saw the Buddha, who had entered Parinirvana immeasurable thousands of myriads of kotas and kalpas ago, speaking those words. So Taho is another emanation of Shakyamuni Buddha, who was Buddha-ness. Here's the time play again, right? That has always existed. They praised this unprecedented experience and scattered heavenly jeweled flowers upon the Buddhas, Taho, and Shakyamuni. From within the stupa, the Buddha Taho offered half of his seat to the Buddha Shakyamuni, saying, "Oh, Shakyamuni Buddha, please take a seat here." Do you see the building of this scroll, this mandala that Nichiren created? He simply took the directions of the treasure tower chapter in order to create the very thing Shakyamuni was offering to the full assembly from across the cosmos, which has to include you and I, right? This great treasure, seven jeweled treasure. Namu myoho renge kyo, not six, not some concatenation. Every character has a purpose in the daimoku. This is why I'm adamant about chanting namu, not shortening that. That's some convention of language that some sect decided we know better than Shakyamuni or Nichiren. Shut up. I'm practicing Nichiren's doctrine of Lotus Sutra Buddhism, not your politically convenient or See, these sects and these groups, they need to identify themselves. It's all ego. Right? So they can have some claim to mastery. It's ridiculous. It's so egotistical. Sorry, side rant. The Buddha Shakyamuni immediately entered the stupa and sat cross-legged on half of the seat. Thereupon, the great assembly saw the two Tathagatas sitting cross-legged on the lion's seat in the seven-jeweled stupa, and they each thought thus, "The Buddhas are seated far away. O Tathagata, we entreat you to use your transcendent powers so that we may be in the air together with you." Well, they're in the air, but they feel distant from where the two Buddhas are sitting, yeah? The Buddha Shakyamuni immediately moved the entire fourfold assembly into the air through his transcendent powers and addressed them with a great voice, saying, "Who in the Saha world," here's the transmigration from samsara, right? "Who in the Saha world is able to extensively teach the Lotus Sutra? It is now the right time. The Tathagata will enter Parinirvana before long, and the Buddha wants to transmit this Lotus Sutra to you." Thereupon, the Buddha, wanting to further elaborate upon the meaning of this, spoke these verses. Although the great sage, the Bhagavat, entered Parinirvana long ago, he has been abiding in a jeweled stupa, and he has now come for the sake of the Dharma. Why is it that people do not strive for the Dharma? Although this Buddha entered Parinirvana incalculable kalpas ago, because it is difficult to encounter, he listens to the Dharma wherever it is taught. The original vow of this Buddha was, "After my Parinirvana, I will always listen to the Dharma wherever it may be." My emanations, my created forms, incalculable as the sands of the Ganges River, we should make a measurement, a rule of measurement for how many sands in the Ganges, have come to hear the Dharma and see the Tathagata Prabhutaratna Tahoe, who has entered Nirvana. Each Buddha form, having abandoned his beautiful land, disciples, devas, humans, nagas, and ritual tributes, has come here so that the Dharma may abide forever. In order to seat all the Buddhas, I transferred immeasurable beings and purified lands through my transcendent powers, and each of these Buddhas settled under a jewel tree as lotus blossoms adorn a limpid, cool pond. Under every jeweled tree was a lion's seat on which the Buddhas sat radiating light. As a great bonfire blazes in the dark of the night, they emitted a subtle fragrance from their bodies which filled the lands of the 10 directions. Sentient beings who smelled this fragrance were overcome with unsurpassed joy. Like branches of a small tree being blown by a great wind. Through this skillful means, I enabled the Dharma to abide forever. I tell the great assembly that after my Nirvana, whoever can preserve and recite this sutra should now individually make a declaration in the presence of the Buddhas. Although the Buddha Pratnubhutaho entered Parinirvana long ago, through his great vow, he has roared the lion's roar, the Tathagata Taho, I myself, and all the emanated forms of Buddha who have gathered here should know this intention. Intention, right? Attitude, intent. O heirs of the Buddha, whoever is able to preserve the Dharma should make a great vow so that it may abide forever. Whoever is able to preserve this teaching of this sutra will thus honor me, Buddha, and Taho. This Buddha Taho always roams the 10 directions in a jeweled stupa in order to hear this sutra. Now, how can we interpret that, what he just said? This Taho Buddha, this emanation of permanently attainable enlightenment that's always is without time, in other words, is roaming all over the cosmos. Could you just hear Nichiren's mind? How can I make that palpable to a samsaric world, right? This Buddha-ness that's available to all of us, we all have it inherently in our physical and in our sentient mind, which is from our physical complexity, our, what do I call it all the time? Our framework, our words are not coming well to me today. It's amazing. Our apparatus, right? Which manifests the sentient mind. So this mind is all over the cosmos. In samsara, it's just in our heads. But in reality, the cosmos is our sentience. Now, don't get that wrong. I'm not saying the universe is sentient. I'm saying you are sentient. And that you, through your sentience, can experience the true nature of all phenomena. Therefore, there are no limits. This is why it's so massive. You follow? So, by saying that that Buddha-ness, that enlightenment, essentially Tao stands in for Buddha-ness, is all over the cosmos, waiting to hear the practice, hear the Dharma, hear the teaching of the Dharma. So it's so logical that Nichiren would make a talisman, a scroll, a mandala to represent this Tao, to listen to our recitations of the teachings. I mean, is that not obvious? To Nichiren, it had to have been. That's why he started right away working on how do I depict this honorably, with dignity and respect, as a funnel for our minds to connect with that thing that allows us to transmigrate samsara into Buddha-ness. There's a visual portal there, the Gohonzon, yeah? And here, Shakyamuni's practically describing it stroke for stroke. Always roams the 10 directions in a jeweled stupa. What's the jeweled stupa? It's the 7-jeweled stupa. It's the Namu Myoho Renge Kyo that's in the center of this mandala, which at the top has both Buddhas and the 4 great bodhisattvas, and so on and so forth. We'll find out about all of that, and it's all in here. And if you want to know more about it, I have a book, you know, Gohonzon Map, and it's a study of each character on the mandala. It's fascinating stuff, really. He also honors all the transformed Buddhas who have come here and who adorn all the worlds with light. Whoever teaches this sutra will see me, the Tathagata Taho, and the transformed Buddhas, O sons of a virtuous family. Each of you must carefully consider this. This is indeed a difficult matter. Make a great vow accordingly. It is not really difficult to teach all of the other sutras, the number of which is equal to the sands of the Ganges River. It is not difficult to make Mount Sumeru and throw it to another quarter. Really? Over innumerable Buddha worlds. It is also not difficult to shake free the manifold cosmos with one toe and throw it far into another distant world. I think he's preparing us. It is not difficult to stand on the highest summit of the world and teach the other innumerable sutras for the sake of sentient beings. However, it will indeed be difficult to teach this sutra in the troubled world after the Buddha's nirvana. Now, Mapo. It is not difficult for anyone to grasp empty space and wander around with it, but it will certainly be difficult to copy and preserve this sutra and cause others to copy it after my nirvana. Right? It is difficult. Look at all the language and thought biases we're having to go through with each version of the sutra I've read so far. What is this? The sixth one I'm reading. Yeah, and we have a couple more to go. Authoritative ones. I mean, there's junk out there too, but trying to stay with some degree of scholarship here. After it is not really difficult to put the great earth on a toenail and ascend with it to the world of the Brahmas. However, it will be indeed difficult to recite this sutra, as any of you who've conquered the three sections of Gongil, I know some organizations are cutting it out less and less because they don't want their members to work too hard. We don't want to turn them away because it's too hard. Did they not read the sutra? It will indeed be difficult to recite the sutra, even for a moment, in the troubled world after the Buddha's nirvana. It is not really difficult to enter into the conflagration at the time of the close of the kalpa, carrying hay on your back, and yet not be burned. Conflagration, for those who don't know, is a great fire. Yeah. So it's not hard for you to strap a bunch of dry hay on your back, walk through that fire, and not get burned. Really? Not in comparison to the effort it takes to learn, recite, copy, and teach the Lotus Sutra, the Myoho Renge Kyoho. Right? It certainly will be difficult to preserve this sutra and teach it to even a single person after my nirvana. Right? Shakyamuni's telling you right there, just a single person. You don't have to go hang out in parking lots and hit people over the head with it. Just make sure whoever you select, or however many you select, you work together and you stay in respect and dignity to the teachings, right? To get committed, really get serious about it. I mean, isn't that what this is saying? It is not indeed really difficult for anyone to preserve the 84,000 treasure houses of the Dharma and the 12-fold scriptures. I have a link on threefoldlotus.com on the study page on the 12-fold, so you know what that means. And teach them so that the listeners can attain the six transcendent powers. It will indeed be difficult for anyone to hear and accept this sutra and to ask about its meaning, which is, I'm always exhorting you guys, email me, ask me questions. I know it's difficult. Shakyamuni says it's difficult after his departure, his nirvana, his extinction. It is not really difficult for people to do such beneficial things as teaching the Dharma. I mean, we can all read, yeah? And making thousands of myriads of kodas of immeasurable, incalculable, sentient beings, numbering as many as the sands of the Ganges River, attain arhatship and perfect the six transcendent powers. But it will certainly be difficult to preserve such a sutra as this after my extinction. I have extensively taught many sutras in incalculable lands from the beginning until now for the sake of the Buddha path, the Buddha way. And yet among them, this sutra is the best. If anyone preserves it, he preserves the form of the Buddha. O sons of a virtuous family, those who preserve and recite this Lotus Sutra, this Myoho Renge Kyo, after my nirvana, must now individually make a declaration in the presence of the Buddhas. I think on that, I'm going to continue. He's still in the midst of his oration here, but I think there's a good breaking point here. We'll continue in the next video. Do you see in reading, and I don't know if you've already read the Lotus Sutra or how many times, it seems like, like most anything, when you reread something, you see new things. You ever had that experience? And it depends on where you are in your development as a Buddhist, as a human, as a mind. Yeah. This teaching is so profound, and yet the more I read it, the more I find it's so blindingly obvious what he's saying. I'm sure to Nietzsche, and it was revelatory and felt like a manual for how to achieve Buddha-ness. Yeah. And through his wisdom, Bodhisattva Nietzsche, because he lives more in our time and sees the level of distractions. I mean, he was living in a difficult time in Japan. There's this transition from this almost really a theocracy built around an emperor, a holy person, to a much more secular, violent rule by might, shogunate, right? A rule by samurai. Life and death all the time present. And so influences of every kind. We're living not far from that very ethos today, but I would argue with millionfold distractions and opinions. We're on the verge of another world war, my friends. I'm not trying to be a pessimist, but there are religious currents running very strong across the world that are itching for Armageddon. They want to be proven right. And by their actions, they're going to do everything in their power to make it happen. It doesn't have to happen. It really doesn't. But this is ego, 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 right? My father's fathers believe this horse shit. But now it's because everyone's believed it for so long, we have to make it come true because we're losing members. People are starting to go, yeah, yeah, he's coming. Whatever. We're smarter than those old shadowy mystical things. We've grown apart from all of that. You know, when we were afraid that when the sun went down, it might not come back the next day, yeah, we were pretty feeble as far as developing our sentient minds. But my goodness, that's so far away from where we are now. How can anyone continue to believe in such craziness? So those elite, those powerful, those craving power, they're losing their grip on everyone because that kind of magical thinking became the way to govern. If you just scare everyone enough, they'll just do whatever you say. That's authoritarianship. And the world has grown to expect it. They don't even feel comfortable unless they have it. Now that gives those power-hungry people a lot of ammunition. It gives them the power they crave and cling to. Familiar words? We can't allow that to happen. Our practice is the only thing that's keeping it from happening. Please know this. Every time you chant, you're another drop of water on the other side of the scale combating that egomaniacal force that surrounds us. Namo myoho renge kyo makes you never want to stop chanting. But as we multiply ourselves in practice and help others see this potential, we will weigh out, and at some point, either that, and I will call it evil, because it threatens every one of our lives, either physically and mentally. There's a lot of sadness around this violence and warmongering, more than I can understand how to express. But the more we chant and the more we grow in number, the more we're going to force those people to either implode, shakobuku, or they're just going to diminish in numbers until their voices grow silent. But it takes this kind of dedication. Namo myo renge kyo. Life is sacred. It is so precious, so brief. We cannot be messing around with it like it's some kind of game. Namo myo renge kyo. Thank you for listening. Sorry I got a little political there, but I mean, I'm a little scared. I can't even turn on YouTube without seeing some commentary about the craziness that's going on. Forget cable news, forget general media. They're all trying to pollute our heads. But if you look at Breaking Points, for instance, as a news source, get a much broader sense of what's going on. I don't know. They say information is power, but I think information isn't always a positive power because it's being manipulated by money and ego. So you have to be careful what you hear, what you listen to, but you can't deny what's going on in the world today just seems to escalate and escalate and escalate, and we affect that. I would argue the reason it's taking so long to happen, because this has been broiling a long time, is because of our practice. So stay strong. Feel confident. Savor your practice. Stay healthy. Be kind. I'll see you in the next one. Okay? Please take care of yourself. Bye for now.